It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we hear from two women advocating for victims of sex trafficking in our state, from providing free legal help to supporting them in their everyday lives. First, the 2019 Academy Awards are this Sunday. For movie lovers, it's one of the biggest nights of the year, and with no clear frontrunner this time around for Best Picture, anything from Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga's A Star is Born to Netflix's Roma could take home the top prize. Of course, it wouldn't be the Oscars without some controversy. This year, the show will go without a host after initial choice Kevin Hart dropped out over some past controversial tweets. The show will also not have an Achievement in Popular Films Award, which the Academy tried to introduce last year, then reversed course after the award was panned by fans and critics. Reggie Ponder joins us now for a preview. He's known as Reggie the Real Critic and appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago. He critiques movies for several other media outlets. You can follow him at Twitter at Reggie the Real Critic. Reggie, welcome back to the show.
Rob, it's good to, you know, this is, I want to sing, it's the most wonderful time of the year, because this is the most wonderful time of the year, man.
You are excited this time of year. This is no lie.
I'm always excited, man. So I'm ready to talk to you, because I'm hoping, Rob, that you're not going to disappoint me this year. I hope you saw some of these movies.
I saw one of the Best Picture nominees, Reggie. I'm sorry I didn't see more. I thought I had, but no, just the one. We'll find out which one as we go on. What's that?
I say it's not so, Rob. So what do you want to talk about today?
Well, let's look at the big the Best Picture nominees, not one at a time. We'll get to those in a bit. But what do you think overall of this crop? Are you excited by these eight movies up for Best Picture?
I am, Rob. But the first thing I want to say, as it relates to eight, I don't like that they do eight. This is really a money move that they want to the Academy wanted to recognize. Some other films, in every other category, there's five nominees. But in this category, they make eight. That's all about giving those movies a nod and saying that I didn't, slight a movie here or there. So I don't like the fact that there are eight. But of all the eight, I think they're all worthy. The only one that I would not vote for would be Green Book, and that's because of the controversy surrounding it. I liked the movie when I saw it, but then when I found out that Don Shirley's family was not consulted and that there were serious fabrications in the film, it's the only movie that I hope does not win.
Now, looking at the variety of pictures, there's a lot. There's, a musical sort of rags-to-riches story. There's a superhero movie. There's a music biopic. There's some serious dramas. There's a lot of different stuff to choose from this time.
Oh, it is, and so you say it, you use the word variety, but there's also this issue of diversity. So when you look at it from an African American perspective, you look at it from a person of color perspective, from a gay perspective, there's just a lot out there, and I think that they did. I'm really happy with the crop overall.
And again, before we get to the individual movies, the ceremony itself, it will be hostless this year. What do you do you think this is going to work out okay?
Yeah, it's going to work out. But this is the first time in 30 years that it will be without a host. And there are probably a number of reasons why they couldn't get a host after Kevin Hart. First, they don't even pay that much. I think Jimmy Kimmel said he got paid like $15,000 to do that. Secondly, the preparation for it is really serious. You know, if you remember Hugh Jackman, I mean, all the numbers and the stuff that you have to do. And then thirdly, the scrutiny is tough, because if you don't do a good job, man, you're going to hear it a lot on the Internet. So they probably had a tough time, because I'm sure they asked people after they asked Kevin Hart. So it's going to be interesting, but hopefully it'll make the show go smoother, actually.
I offered to do it for $10,000. They must have lost my email in the shuffle, though. Let's get to some of the movies now up for Best Picture. Let's start with A Star is Born. Here's a clip from that film.
Can I ask you a personal question? Do you write songs or anything?
I don't sing my own songs.
Why?
I just don't feel comfortable.
Why wouldn't you feel comfortable?
Well, because, like, almost every single person that I've come in contact with in the music industry has told me that my nose is too big and that I won't make it.
Your nose is beautiful.
Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga there in A Star is Born. They're both also nominated, by the way, for Best Actor and Best Actress. What was your take on this one, Reggie?
I love this film. I think that Bradley Cooper, from a directorial perspective, was fantastic. He raised his level to from a singing perspective to be with Lady Gaga, and she raised her level from an acting perspective to be with him. This was a very good movie. And if people haven't seen it, you got 2 days before the Oscars. Run out and see it, Rob.
Oh, you're talking to me in particular. And a great thing, Reggie, you know, it seems like a lot more movie theaters, or at least in this area, they are rerunning. They're pulling some of these movies back out and showing them so people can go out and see a lot of the Best Picture contenders. That's kind of a nice development.
It's a wonderful thing, because a lot of times people say, well, I haven't seen that film yet. And some of these films were playing so early in the year that you don't have a chance to go back and see them. So I think that is a great development.
Talking to Reggie Ponder, Reggie the Real Critic, looking at the Academy Awards coming up this weekend. You can join in with your favorites, by the way, at 800-642-1234. What movie do you want to see take home awards on Sunday? 800-642-1234. Let's give another listen now to a clip. Bohemian Rhapsody, we'll say, with our musical theme here. Reggie, here's a listen.
How's that?
Higher. Can you go a bit higher?
If I go any higher, only dogs will hear me.
Try.
Galileo! Galileo Figaro!
One more.
So a key moment in the creation of a hit song, the title song in the movie Bohemian Rhapsody. Reggie, I've seen mixed reviews of this movie in some ways. Are you surprised it's up for Best Picture?
I'm not, but I've talked to a number of my colleagues who I like this a lot, because I liked Queen's music but didn't know that much about the group, and I think just for me it was enough for me to know and learn about. But I think that what people didn't like is that they don't like the fact that they feel that his homosexuality was hidden in a way, or put on the back burner and that's a big controversy for the film, and a lot of people are having problems with that.
And also the movie's director, Bryan Singer, fired before the completion of the film. Faced allegations of sexual harassment and assault over the years. Does the Academy think about this kind of thing when they're voting?
I don't know if they do. I think that they should. I think that in today's age, I think that people are starting to think differently about a lot of things. So I don't know, but I think they should.
Now let's give a listen to the one of the 8 Best Picture nominees that I did see. Here it is.
If the world found out what we truly are, what we possess, we could lose our way of life.
Wakanda is strong enough to help others and protect ourselves at the same time.
If you are not so stubborn, you would make a great queen.
I just saw that scene again the other day. Black Panther there, Reggie. We don't always see superhero movies. We never see superhero movies getting nominated for Best Picture. Did this one stand out to you as one that could maybe break through that barrier?
It did for me, and it should. This movie changed, I think, the landscape of superhero movies from a cultural perspective, from a superhero perspective, from a story perspective. The way in which they weaved a lot of political and social issues within this in this film, and still made it a bang bang kind of superhero movie. I think they did a fantastic job here, and so I'm very, very happy that it got nominated. And I hope, as I was talking about when we say nominated 8 films, that this wasn't just nominated to get the nomination, that people would really consider this as one of the best films.
A side note, this is up for some music awards, too. The soundtrack included Kendrick Lamar, performers from all over Africa. Is this a lock for some best music awards?
I don't think it's a lock, but I think that it has a really good chance. I when you look at that music category, in fact, there's some good things out there. And in one of those categories, Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper's song is in one of those categories as well. So I don't think it's a lock, but I think there's rightfully so. Kendrick Lamar and the whole soundtrack should have been nominated, and good for that.
We're talking right now with movie critic Reggie Ponder about the upcoming Academy Awards. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. What do you think should win Best Picture of the Year? How about Best Actor, Best Actress of the Year? And did you see more of the Best Picture nominees than I did this year? I clocked in at one of the eight. Did you get out? Have you gone out to see some of them lately? Tell us about it. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue the conversation with film critic Reggie Ponder, a.k.a. Reggie the Real Critic. We're previewing this weekend's Academy Awards, looking at some of the films that are nominated for Best Picture. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think should win? Will win? Are you going to be watching? Do you have Oscar watching parties? Call and tell us about that. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let's pick up with another movie now, A Black Klansman, another film up for Best Picture. Here's a listen to a clip.
This is the job. What's your problem?
That's my problem. For you, it's a crusade. For me, it's a job. It's not personal, nor should it be.
Why haven't you bought into this?
Why should I?
Because you're Jewish, brother. The so-called chosen people. You've been passing for a WASP. White Anglo-Saxon Protestant, cherry pie, hot dog, white boy.
Now, Spike Lee, never nominated for Best Director, never won a prize. Do you think this movie has a shot?
I do think it has a shot. It's really interesting, Rob. We talk about in the industry a lot of times how people don't win for the movie they should have won for. And so Spike has not been nominated several times. This is a very good movie that he might get the, I think it's Spike Lee's Time Award. So it can happen.
And talk us through the plot of this one.
So this is a story where the police are trying to infiltrate the KKK. And a black police officer uses his quote-unquote white voice to get close to David Duke and the KKK. But at some point in time, they got to meet him. So they send a white guy in to be the black guy. And the whole story is, again, that they do infiltrate the KKK. They find out about a plot to do some devious things, and they follow that through. So some people get arrested. I mean, and I won't tell all the things that happen there, but it really is about a black guy infiltrating the KKK and the police getting a lot of intelligence and able to stop a crime.
Let's touch on another movie now, a film about former Vice President Dick Cheney. The movie is Vice. It is also up for Best Picture. Here's a listen.
I want you to be my VP. You're the solution to my problem.
I'm CEO of a large company. I have been Secretary of Defense. I have been Chief of Staff. The Vice Presidency is mostly a symbolic job.
Now, this one, Reggie, is kind of a parody, I guess. A lot of not-so-great reviews out there. The Washington Post called it an absurd mess, yet it ends up here for Best Picture. Where do you weigh in on this one?
So, for me, this was an extremely interesting film because if any of it's true, it will tell you so much about how our political system works and the power of Dick Cheney. It also tells you something about President Bush as well. And from my understanding is that many of these accounts are true, so it's less of a parody as it is a depiction of some real true-life events. And it was a fascinating film to me. I can't say that I would have put this one on my best film list, but again, if you're into politics, this would be a film that you want to see.
Okay, let's round up the rest we've mentioned. We got two more. The Favorite, Reggie, about Queen Anne of Great Britain and some of her aspiring favorites. I'll say I almost saw this one, but the time didn't work out just a few days ago, so I was close on this. Tell us about this one, Reggie.
So this one is about two women in the Queen's court who are trying to get her favor. And so which one will become the favorite? And they go back and forth trading sex favors to making deals with people in Parliament, doing backstabbing stuff. It is absolutely interesting, absolutely funny, and to me, worthy of this nomination.
And funny, because this could just be dark and painful, but there's a sense of humor to it, too?
Oh, yes. There's definitely a sense of humor to it. And because I have 10 brothers and sisters, I really identify with this trying to be the favorite, because I was trying to do that myself many years ago. So I identify with that. This is good.
And then finally, Roma, distributed in the United States by Netflix. So we'll talk about the Netflix side of it. First, tell us about the movie Roma. I hadn't seen as much buzz about this one coming into the Oscars.
Yeah, I'm a Chicago critic. I'm not part of the Chicago Film Critics Association, but the Chicago Film Critics Association voted this as their best film of the year. And in fact, there have been many awards for this movie already. And it really just follows a maid and her trials and tribulations working for this particular family. It's in Spanish, so you there's subtitles for it. So you really do need to pay attention here. Now, for me, Rob, subtitles sometimes gets in the way for me because I want to watch the action as opposed to read the stuff. But this film is regarded, I think, across the board as one of the best films out there, period. And it's a foreign language film. So it's being nominated for the foreign language film and being nominated for Best Picture. This is, and the star is being nominated for Best Actress. So this is a film to be reckoned with.
And it's interesting. This is Netflix. This is the first time, I think, that they've created something that got an Oscar nomination for Best Picture. Is this a really significant moment in the movie industry?
I think it's significant in that you have Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, all these different players out there doing some things outside of the traditional Hollywood system. They're making films, they're releasing them for 2 or 3 weeks to go into the studios, and then they're letting you see them on the internet. So I think it is significant. I don't think you can stop this train. This train is out of the station, and these other entities are here to, they're here to play, and they're here to stay.
Talking to Reggie Ponder. Reggie, the Real Critic, previewing this Sunday's Academy Awards. Reggie, we've talked about the movies that did get Best Picture nominations. Are there any that you think should have been on that list but were not?
So my favorite movie of the year was If Beale Street Could Talk. And it did not get a nomination. I am crushed because it is by far my favorite film of the year, and very few people have seen this film, in fact. I was looking at the numbers for it. Very few people have seen it, but I would recommend that people go check this one out. This is an adaptation by Barry Jenkins from Moonlight, and it's an adaptation of, I'm actually forgetting his name now. But wow, I drew a blank, Rob.
I don't have it in front of me either. Sorry.
And the fact that I'm drawing a blank because it's one of the one of our foremost writers in America. But I'll hopefully think of it before we get off. I know we only have a few minutes. But If Beale Street Could Talk is the movie that I would say was snubbed.
And sell it to us, since a lot of us haven't seen it. Tell us a little more about it and why it's such a great movie.
So this movie is about a couple, a very young couple who falls in love and their love journey. The young man gets accused of raping a woman, and he did not do it. He goes to jail, and it's all about how we can get him out of jail, how we can get him justice. All of that stuff is there, but it's really wrapped, enveloped in a love story, and it's all about how the love of the two people, the love of the family, and the love of the community actually keeps the hope and this unit alive. This is a very heartwarming story. It's a beautiful story, but it's also a tragic story because it is also about the injustices that are out there as well. And my friend texted me so I could remember because I was drawing a blank. But it's by James Baldwin. Yeah, James Baldwin, an adaptation by James Baldwin. This is a phenomenal film, and it was my best film of the year. So I hope people go check this out.
All right, we took most of our time, Reggie, with Best Picture. Hit me with some of your best actors, supporting, and so on, people you're hoping win.
Okay, so I think Rami Malek should win for Bohemian Rhapsody. He was fantastic. I actually hope he wins. But William Dafoe was really good at Eternity's Gate. A lot of people are saying that Glenn Close is a lock for The Wife. That's the only person that I've heard who have been a lock. I think that Mahershala Ali will absolutely win for Green Book. I find it very interesting that Viggo Mortensen gets the leading role nod, but that Mahershala Ali gets the supporting role when they were equal. That just bothers me. The If Beale Street Could Talk, it did get a few nominations, and one of them is Regina King, and I think she will win for that. And then for animated feature film, my vote is, there are a lot of good movies out there, but my vote is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. This is so much fun. So I hope people go and check that one out as well. I tried to throw a few in there. If you got a minute for two more, I'll do it. But
Go for it, yeah.
All right. So for Best Director, I think it's going to be Roma. I think Alfonso Cuarón will win for Roma. Just because of what they did in this film. And then for costume design, I think that Ruth Carter, the third time will be the charm. She will win for The Favorite. And then the last one is that I will say is for original song. I think Shallow, A Star Is Born, will absolutely win. Rob, go see some movies, man. This is the best time of the year. I'm telling you.
All right, you got me excited now. Reggie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
All right, thanks again, Rob.
That's Reggie Ponder, also known as Reggie the Real Critic. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago and critiques movies for several other media outlets, and he's our go-to guy for what's happening at the movies. He joins us to talk about this weekend's Academy Awards and what films are expected to win big. Send us your Oscar ballots, email ideas@WPR.org. If you get everything right, you win nothing. We don't really have a contest. I'd just be interested to see what you have to say. Coming up after the news, we learn more about human trafficking happens around Wisconsin, in small communities, farmland, and cities, and what it takes for survivors to rebuild a life for themselves. Our guests have done legal efforts and other efforts to help victims of trafficking. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Human trafficking continues to be an issue around the world and here in our state. And our next two guests are helping the victims of trafficking navigate the legal system and their everyday lives. Rachel Monica Wilcox is an attorney and mediator. She's the founder and CEO of Lotus, a Milwaukee-based legal clinic for victims of trafficking and other forms of gender-based violence. And Sister Rosemary Bonk is a school sister of Notre Dame Central Pacific Province. She's a member of the Advisory Board of Sisters Program South, a drop-in center working to help women in prostitution or sex trafficking create safer, healthier lives. She's also involved with the Human Trafficking Task Force of Greater Milwaukee. We talked with them both earlier in the week. Now, Rachel, you've been working firsthand with people impacted by trafficking through your legal clinic, Lotus, for a lot of years now. What first inspired you to get involved with this issue and create these resources?
So I was teaching in about 2011 at Mount Mary University. I was the director of the Justice Program, and I really wanted to bring some fresh energy to an all-women's university, and decided that, you know, the topic of human trafficking was not well known as a domestic issue, even though it was very clear that Milwaukee, for certain, and the entire state of Wisconsin had its problems with this. So I started teaching about it, and very quickly, I would say within a year, got known as an attorney and then also as somebody who knew about the issues and understood the needs of survivors, and was contacted by a local law enforcement agent who had six women that had just been through a federal court case against testifying against their trafficker, and they all had civil legal needs, multiple civil legal needs, and so she asked if I could assist in finding them some help. And I picked up the phone, and it's the rule of the universe. Within six phone calls, you can pretty much achieve almost anything if you put your mind to it. And I was able to place those cases with attorneys who had a heart and a soul and a passion to help. And that really gave me the idea and the inspiration that I knew where there were six, there were 6,000. And that, in truth, has been the case and the start of the work of Lotus.
And Sister Rosemary, can you talk about how you and the School Sisters of Notre Dame have gotten involved in this issue?
Well, interestingly, going back a number of years in time, I taught at an alternative high school for dropouts. And what I found was that some of the women that were in the school had come off the street. They had been involved in the street sex trade, but had somehow been able to come forth and participate at this school. And I thought they were such wonderful women. And I couldn't imagine how they had ever gotten involved in the first place. And secondly, I was just in awe that somehow they pulled themselves out. And so someone on the staff there knew how I was feeling about this. And so she knew there was a group of survivors coming up from Chicago, from Genesis House, and they were going to be spending a weekend at a missionary house here. And I was invited to join them in the evening. They were going to be doing some sharing. And the first thing I noticed when they arrived was their excitement, because they had been given money to go shopping at the Grand Avenue Mall. And they had never had money to buy gifts for people for a long time. So that was just the greatest thing for them. But then when they sat down to do some sharing, they were invited to bring their favorite scripture quote. And I'm saying, scripture quote? These women have a spiritual side to them? Well, it was so moving. I don't remember the scripture stories, but I just remember being in tears, hearing what they had to share and what those stories meant to them.
Rachel, can you talk about the difference that getting some help, legal help, social help, and more can make for a woman who has been through the legal process and been, I guess, a victim of sex trafficking?
I can. So what we often don't understand is that most victims or survivors have had encounters with the legal system that criminalized them instead of actually identifying them as victims. So it is not uncommon for us to meet a woman who has gotten herself out of the life of sexual exploitation, and she might have $15,000 or $20,000 in municipal tickets or fines. She may have a record that is 3 inches thick. We worked with one client who had over 100 different charges that we work to clear from her record. They were all accumulated while she was trafficked. So we forget that the individuals appear as something that might not be the reality of what their story has been. Trafficking can often begin pretty early in somebody's life, maybe when they're 12 or 13 years old, and continuing that victimization through early adulthood. So by the time they're 30, You don't necessarily identify a victim of child sexual exploitation, even though that's exactly what they have been. So the legal help removes obstacles. I would say that is one of the primary things that it does. It can help somebody get an apartment. It can help somebody get back into school. It can help somebody access critical healthcare benefits to pay for repair and damage that was done to them during a life of very difficult sexual exploitation. But it also provides compassion, support, and mentoring from a professional individual who treats them as a client. And I just love it about Lotus is that we will never charge an individual for the legal services we provide, and yet they come to us as a purchaser of professional services. And we take their lead on how quickly to move the case or how slowly. And this is so stabilizing for a person whose identity has been shattered. You have to go brick by brick. It can be a very slow process, one step forward, 10 steps back, but we're there for the course of it. We are there. You can enter into the legal services and come back again and again, and the well never goes dry. So I think it's compassionate, client-directed service, and the removal of obstacles.
And Sister Rosemary, you're a part of something called Sisters Program South, which helps survivors create safer, healthier lives. Can you talk about the kind of things you work with your clients on?
I actually don't work directly with clients. I am on the advisory board for the Sisters Program South, and this was an initiative that was thought of by religious congregations of women who wanted to do something to respond to the problem in Milwaukee. And so in 2015, they started a faith-based initiative that was made up of religious congregations, the Benedict Center, and Ascension Lutheran Church. And with a lot of fundraising and looking around, they were finally able to rent space at Hope House on 2nd and Orchard. And the program is officially started now. It began in 2017. And what they do is a drop-in center. It's sort of like a daytime shelter for people that are looking for a safe place to be. And so when someone comes there, they try to assess what the person's needs are. Sometimes they just need a place to sleep. They need food. If they need more, they begin to talk with them because they have a case manager and a counselor, and they determine what need the woman needs to work with first. There might be a number of needs, medical needs, a desire to go to school, a desire to find a place to live. So they respond to whatever the need is, and they do it without judgment. There's no judgment as to whether the woman is on drugs, whether she's involved in the street trade, but she's welcome there, and hope that they will be able to give her a healthier and a safer life.
And Rachel, a lot of people around Wisconsin might be listening and thinking, this is a big city problem. I understand you actually get a lot of contacts from rural areas as well. Is that right?
We certainly do. I would say in the last 3 weeks, my staff told me that over 65% of our new case calls were from rural areas. And it's also really important for our listeners to understand it's not just sex trafficking. It's labor trafficking. Wisconsin is an enormous state in terms of agriculture, the hospitality industry, the dairy industry, forestry, and construction. And each of those industries brings in a great deal of people that are very, very vulnerable and are, in fact, trafficked for labor. So we have significant numbers of labor trafficking cases, and those individuals have a very different profile or a different background. The common theme between both sex and labor trafficking is exploitation of vulnerabilities. So whether you're from a big town or a small town or a tiny village in Mexico and you don't speak the language, you have inherent vulnerabilities that somebody is trying to exploit. And so that is something I think most individuals in Wisconsin, it's happening right under your feet. I guarantee you it's happening right in your community, and you just haven't seen it yet.
Sister Rosemary, to the extent that we do think of people are being trafficked for sex, or as Rachel was saying, for labor, and mostly they're probably invisible to us, maybe we think of them a little bit. Can you talk about the need to see people in these situations as humans?
I'm so glad you asked that question. I think that's exactly why our School Sisters of Notre Dame are interested, because one of our directions is to help people to become who they're supposed to become, enabling people to reach the fullness of their potential. And I think that when you work with these women, you don't see them and label them as someone involved in the sex trade. They are women or men, or there are even young boys. And you see them as people, and you want to bring about a transformation so that the world can be transformed. And also, I think one of the issues is that if we could come up with more resources to help these women, but also stricter rules for those who are trafficked, giving them a longer sentence, for people who are seeking, who are the solicitors, that there might be something that would happen with them. And I know that the Benedict Center actually has a restorative justice program for those, so that they have to come to classes, and as part of that, they get to hear the stories of some of the women who have been in the sex trade.
And Rachel, as we wrap up, we've been talking about the work you do on the legal and other levels, and the work Sister Rosemary and her colleagues are doing. Are there changes, though, you'd like to see when it comes to support from state and local governments?
Absolutely. So I'll just say a couple of the ones that we're working on the most right now. Wisconsin currently has a law that allows a victim of trafficking to vacate her conviction for prostitution if it can be shown to the court that she obtained that conviction during a period where she was being trafficked through force, fraud, or coercion, that someone else was dictating her activities. The trouble with that law is that it's so narrow. And the chances are that most of the clients we see who we do obtain this vacatur for and clear that prostitution conviction have multiple other kinds of crimes. And the law really comes from a misunderstanding of the scope of the problem and the way that individuals who are vulnerable get used, you know, for multiple bad purposes by people that are in control and have got some dominance over them. So we would love for the state legislature to take up that statute and amend it and follow the lead of multiple other states in the country. There are at least seven other states that have strong laws that allow to the removal of convictions for varied other kinds of crimes. And it's just, we feel like that is one of the most important things that could be done right now to address the needs of survivors. Now, that's on the far end, right? Somebody's maybe 20 or 30 years old, maybe 50, 60 years old even. We've got clients with those needs. But when we're also talking about the people who are 12 years old up to 17, we could also pass a law called a safe harbor that would decriminalize the act of a child or a youth who's been commercially exploited and never allow them to be charged with the crime of prostitution. Our law currently allows for an individual who's, say, 17 years old, who's been, you know, maybe she's posting online and, you know, she's clearly active in commercial sexual activity. She can be charged with prostitution. And we would like to remove that because under the law, frankly, it makes no sense. A person under the age of 17 is not granted legal capacity to consent to sex. So why on earth would we ever charge them with the crime of prostitution? This would help us on the front end to remove some of those collateral consequences that we see label somebody as a victim from age 17, who's labeled them as a criminal when they're actually a victim, and then their life continues to snowball from there on after. Mostly, I feel, because something in their spirit or their identity has shattered, and they don't see themselves as worthy of a good life that everybody else is entitled to. So why don't we start in the front end and pass a safe harbor law that allows us to stop the problem before it even starts and give victims better identification, services, compassion, and allow them to thrive from an earlier age on?
We'll leave it there for now. Thanks to both of you for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Rob, for all of your astute interview questions.
Rachel Monaco Wilcox is an attorney and mediator and also the founder and CEO of Lotus, a Milwaukee-based legal clinic for victims of trafficking and other forms of gender-based violence. Sister Rosemary Bonk is a school sister of Notre Dame Central Pacific Province and a member of the Advisory Board of Sisters Program South, a drop-in center working to help women in prostitution or sex trafficking create safer, healthier lives. You can learn more about sex trafficking in our state and hear from a survivor at a Thursday, March 7th event at Mount Mary University in Milwaukee. Rachel Monaco Wilcox will be the keynote speaker there. The event is free to attend, but online registration is required by February 28th. For details, go to WPR.org and search trafficking. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Governor Tony Evers vetoed a Republican-backed bill that would have used the state budget surplus to cut taxes. We'll learn more about the decision in just a bit. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a visit to a community garden.
Metcalf Park Legacy Garden in Milwaukee has transformed several vacant lots into a vibrant place for community gatherings and education.
Oh, yeah, these the beets.
Yeah, these the beets. And over here we got...
The garden is overseen by the Metcalf Park Community Bridges Organization and Groundwork Milwaukee, which provides modest stipends for neighborhood kids to work on the garden in the summer months. The Lands We Share Farming History Project visited the garden and spoke with Community Bridges Director Danelle Cross. She talks about what gardening means to her, the community, and the city of Milwaukee.
These are onions, and these right here, they're just carrots.
Some of them is weeds. This is like a carrot, I believe. These right here.
All right. So we got an hour left, y'all. Y'all want to jump in this garden and get some work done, all right? So come on over to the beds here. I want everybody to grab some.
Hi, my name is Danelle Cross. I am the executive director of Metcalf Park Community Bridges. We first started out doing this work as a group of residents. The garden was not just for children. It was for the whole community, so kids and old people and young people and family and boys and girls and men and women. We had a huge, huge amount of people building that garden. It was at least 30 residents out there. And so I got sold on the garden, which I wasn't sold at first, but I got sold on it because of the activity of it. I worked down the street and next door, and I would come to take my break every day at the garden. It was so beautiful. The wood was beautiful. The mulch was beautiful. The plants was beautiful. And I started eating stuff that I never would eat off the vine. Like bell peppers. I never had a raw bell pepper in my life. If you didn't cook it and stuff it, you didn't eat it. You know, so I started eating raw bell peppers. They taste so different from the stove. So now I can't eat them from the stove. So I would go there every day, and I would pluck off my lunch.
So you taste it.
Okay, yeah, let me say that.
Would you taste it?
I taste it.
So almost 2:45. Yeah. We just got through this.
We started to do the work in 2012, right? When I got there, it was two vacant lots, just two. And we put the first garden on one of them. And then another house got towed down. I don't even remember what it looked like. What bothered me about it is that I couldn't even recall it in my memory that these houses had came down in a way that we couldn't even remember that they were ever there. That in itself caused me a moment to pause and really kind of get a little bit afraid for what could possibly happen if we don't come together and push at the city to work with us to develop our neighborhood. You know, people say Black Lives Matter. The reason they're saying that is because we see in so many cases that they don't matter to people outside of Black communities. Well, Metcalf Park people matter. And so I'm constantly saying these children matter. They should have a decent place to play. And I'm going to keep saying it till people understand it, that unless you invest in Metcalf Park and communities like it, it will spill over and affect this whole city.
We're going to work together, so we're all going to weed together, okay? Then we're all going to plant together, and we're all going to water together, okay?
This story is part of the Lands We Share series and was edited by Craig Ely. The Lands We Share exhibit is at the Wisconsin Black Historical Society in Milwaukee through March 1st, with a community conversation and dinner taking place there later this month. Learn more at landsweshare.org. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Have you heard about WPR's new Why Wisconsin project? It's a way for you to ask the questions, and we'll do our best to answer them. To submit your own question, go to WPR.org/WHY Wisconsin. That's like W-H-Y Wisconsin. There we'll ask you, what do you wonder about Wisconsin, its people, or its culture that you want Wisconsin to look into? So far, we've looked into the 1980s PBS show Story Lords, listened to some songs about Wisconsin, and learned why the badger is the state animal. Soon, you'll find out who creates the goofy digital highway sign messages you might see when you're out driving, and find out what's up with cannibal sandwiches. So again, submit your questions. What are you curious about in Wisconsin? WPR.org/Wisconsin. Bad news, good news. The bad news first. Our galaxy is on a collision course with another galaxy, and we may have to deal with the problem of intergalactic collisions way sooner than we used to think. The good news, that's still over 2 billion years away, so you don't need to adjust your plans for the weekend. Even better news, there's a pretty good chance that our solar system won't even feel the collision, and if you happen to still be around in 2.4 billion years, you'll get a pretty sweet view of the night sky. Here's the deal. Our galaxy, the Milky Way, is scheduled to run into the Andromeda Galaxy in 4 or 5 billion years. Astronomers have been talking about this. It's even a key plot point in one of my favorite science fiction novels. But a new study dated today in the monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society says we'll have an intergalactic fender bender even sooner. Researchers say the Large Magellanic Cloud Galaxy will cross paths with our Milky Way in about 2.4 billion years. In their paper, they describe the impact. There's going to be some wild stuff at the core of our galaxy, including firing up a mostly mellow, super huge black hole at the center of the Milky Way, and maybe turning it into a quasar, one of the brightest objects in the universe. While the idea of two galaxies crashing into each other sounds pretty catastrophic, the authors say the Earth might not feel it so much. Looks like we'll be in a pretty quiet neighborhood, but one of the co-authors of the report says the quasar could give us, quote, a spectacular display of cosmic fireworks. I'm sure it'll be cloudy that night anyway. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.